Mrs. Phyllis White, Reel 5. Yes, I was wondering about the state of the returning prisoners of war, you know, that you saw.
Yes, well, they were thin, but in actual fact they were in reasonable health. They had terrible short haircuts, which made them look dreadful. But that had been done for hygiene reasons. But they had come down from the railway quite some time before, and the ones I knew had been in camps in Thailand where there was more food and away from the railway, and they weren't being slave driven by the Japanese to build the railway, and they'd had time to rest and recuperate. By and large, they were in reasonable shape, but there were obviously some who'd suffered terribly. And the army nurses had set up a hospital in Rangoon, and I remember Tony Lucas, our particular friend, saying it was so blissful to lie between sheets, lovely white sheets on a proper bed. How kind the nurses were. The only snag for them was that when they'd arrived at the hospital in the transports from the airfield, they'd had to wait up to 4 hours to be processed. There were such hundreds of them, which was really asking a bit much. But I suppose if they'd been dispersed, they might never have got hold of all of them. They might have disappeared or died or just not gone forward to give their particulars. And the army would never have been able to process them through the business of repatriation.
Did you have to take care with food? You know, if you were in the sort of canteen situation serving ex-POWs because of their shrunken stomachs.
Well, no, we were doing regular army then. The prisoners of war, if they were really bad, they were being looked after in the hospitals. They weren't coming to our canteens. No, our canteens were only for the serving military, not the prisoners of war. It just so happened that I was able to trace these two and get in contact with them.
How about the Japanese? Did you see any Japanese in
Burma? Yes, we did, and it was a great satisfaction. It's terrible to say it, but to see them being made to do menial jobs, mending roads, being transported around without any sort of weapons, in trucks, looking very dejected. I can't tell you how satisfactory it was. It's an unkind thing to say, really, very unchristian, but many of them were probably quite innocent. They'd only done their job. But they could be so unnecessarily brutal. And they were getting a small taste of their own medicine. Of course, we weren't able to hit them or slap them or spit on them or throw stones at them or anything like that. I even felt like it sometimes.
Were you given orders about how to behave to the Japanese?
I suppose we must have been. I don't know. I know we were told not to buy things off the Burmese. We were living on army rations, which is mostly dried food, reconstituted. I'll say they did very well, considering, but it wasn't very exciting. But the Bernese were offering fresh fruit, remember, particularly bananas. And of course they were anxious to get a little money. We had Indian rupees, I think. And I managed to get hold of some Japanese money that they'd issued, notes and coins, but only as a souvenir. It wasn't legal tender. But we were told not to buy from the Burmese because we would be taking money out of their mouths because they had suffered quite considerably.
This, of course, was a time of upheaval in Burma, wasn't it? With the independence movement growing. Was there any signs of that during your time there?
No, really, because we were only concerned with military situations. And I mean, Rangoon was in such a terrible mess, really.
Was it?
Oh, terrible. I mean, it'd been extensively bombed by the Allies anyway, down by the docks particularly. And the place was exceedingly shabby. Potholes in the road everywhere. And the only thing that really stood out was the wonderful Shwe Dagon Pagoda with the golden roofs, which we went to see. Of course, everybody did. You had to take your shoes off. It wouldn't have been raining, we were paddling in several inches of water, which was quite amusing. It's a beautiful place, it really is fascinating.
And that was untouched, was it, the pagoda?
Actually, yes, I don't know, it might have lost a few gold flakes. I can't remember now. But when I was in Pegu, I was there for about a fortnight, there were some rather nice lakes. There's a river, the Pegu River, which runs close by. And on our way to the lakes, we used to have swimming parties, we passed what looked like a football stadium with a corrugated iron roof. And underneath it was this reclining figure of a Buddha, about 20 feet long, I should think, lying on his side, right side, all in beautifully coloured clothing. The usual white face, and his feet turned up at a very peculiar, uncomfortable angle, and the soles of the feet were all covered in, I presume, glass, different coloured glass. I doubt if they'd been jewels, but they looked like jewels. It was a wonderful sight, and that was untouched. I never forget, it made a huge impression on me.
I suppose the Japanese are Buddhist, aren't they?
Some of them are, yes. Sort of, well, it was lucky the British hadn't bombarded these. You see, the artillery had pretty well flattened everything. There'd been a lot of desperate fighting around Pegu for several weeks, I think.
Was there still some concern about pockets of Japanese, you know, still fighting on while you were there?
Not that we were aware of. I think that was perhaps more in jungly areas in the north. There were still Japanese, little tiny groups of them here and there. But I think the army had been very successful in making a grand sweep down through Burma, and any Japs they came across, you know, were captured and prisoners of war.
Did you get any feeling from the troops that you were serving that they felt rather sort of forgotten from the war? Isolated from things.
not, I think, at that time, but I know they had been because they called it the Forgotten Army, didn't they? But once they'd managed to make the great push, early 1944, after Kohima and Imphal, there was quite a different atmosphere, I think, amongst the military. And the Japs were weakening, and their lines of communication were so long. But well, the troops did get fed up, of course, it was all the hanging around, waiting to be told what to do next when peace was declared. And they were just dying to get home.
Did they talk much to you about their homes and families?
Some of them did. I can't remember much about them, about it now. We met so many, you see. It was just a constant stream of people that you were talking to, being nice to. Because we were expected to, you know, fraternize, as it were, with, not intimately, but pleasantly, with men, warrant officers and officers, whoever asked you out.
How about the other ranks? Would you have been expected?
Oh, yes, very much the other ranks. Yes.
It was all ranks you were...
Yes, I mean, the canteens were for the other ranks, not for the officers. Don't know what they did. They looked after themselves, I suppose. But, yes, well, the average British soldier is a very resourceful man, and if they needed anything, they won it. That was the great expression. You won spares for your vehicle and things you couldn't get. Somehow or other, you wangled it. We had to ask every man for a deposit, I can't remember how much it was, for every mug that they had in the canteen for their tea. We didn't serve coffee, it was only tea. Otherwise we'd never got the mugs back. But they were very cheerful. I remember one of the nicest evenings I had was a dance with must have been a sergeant's mess somewhere, and one particular sergeant, who was slightly shorter than me, but he claimed almost every dance, and he was a real Hammersmith Palais de Danse expert, and we danced and danced my shoes off. There was no feeling of them and us or anything like that. It was all so friendly.
Would you have danced with other ranks as well?
Oh, yes.
It was, you were all together, were you, in these social events?
Yes, very much so. Sometimes we were able to wear civilian clothes. I had one or two evening dresses. I think that's why we went down a while with the sergeant's dance, because we were in evening dress. I had a yellow dress with gold shoes that he wore through. And other times we had to wear our bush jackets and with long sleeves and trousers and our army shoes, which were so good for dancing. They had their army shoes on too, so, but we managed. I'm not sure how, can't remember how the music was produced. Either gramophones or perhaps a band.
Were you pleased you were able to be a Waltzby? You know, that you did sort of serve in the war, as it were.
Yes, I was sorry that I hadn't been able to join earlier, really. And, of course, although one couldn't be sorry the war ended, but it meant that my term of service was very much shortened. In actual fact, I was only for about 2 months.
Was there a difference, do you think, in sort of the perception of the role and service between those who had gone right through the war and the new people
Australia?
Were you sort of old WASBys and new WASBys?
And the new WASBys weren't very well received by the old ones, I regret to say.
Did you find that yourself?
Yes, I did, particularly in one particular mess. I'd better not be too personal about it, but there wasn't a happy atmosphere in that mess. I was very glad when I was posted somewhere else.
What were you
perhaps I was young and bumptious, I don't know. I mean, I was only 22. And they'd been through a lot. It was unfortunate that I was allotted a bedroom to share with another WASBY who had been married, but her husband had been killed the year before in Normandy. And so, of course, she was very sad. But I was newly married and perhaps rather bumptious, I don't know. But, I mean, that wasn't my fault. I'd waited long enough to be married. 2 or 3 years, well, certainly 2 years, it was a really hard slog. I mean, when you read what they'd done and what they'd been through, and, I mean, some of them were within earshot of the guns, must have been quite frightening. You know, well, with the army, I suppose, they expected it, but there was so much sort of ordering of things and then countermandering it, and that really gets you down off a bit, I should think.
How about Min Taylor? You know, did she come round and inspect you?
Well, she might have done in the days when they were doing the mobile canteens, but when the war finished, she was in Rangoon at one stage, but she was very busy sussing out the possible areas where they could go forward and set up canteens Well, they set up one in Singapore, and they were static canteens. They went to Sumatra. Don't think they got into Java. The war in the East Indies, of course, turned nasty with the natives turning against the Allied troops. So they hastily beat a retreat from there. And some went on to Hong Kong and even Japan, because, of course, you know, they had armies of occupation.
Was your demob, you know, did this all come through very officially?
Well, I sent in a letter to Mrs. Taylor, Colonel Taylor, stating the reason why I needed a early demob, because my husband had been out east for over 5 years. His health was deteriorating. He was getting a lot of tummy trouble. His repatriation date was coming up for November. And if I didn't go with him, I could have waited months and months to be repatriated myself, and I'm afraid we put our personal feelings before all else, and the canteen service was doing a useful job, but it wasn't desperately urgent or anything like that. You know, it hadn't got the wartime urgency and drive about it that it had had previously. perhaps that's why the older Wasbys resented the new Wasbys, that they suddenly, you know, the tension had gone. And there we were, swanning about, having a, they might call it, jolly easy time, whereas they'd, you know, been working their butts off in all weathers and long hours, keeping the thing on the road, coping with things like breakdowns and transport and so on.
Do you think the WASP is being given the recognition that perhaps other women's services have, like the Wrens and the WASP?
No, they haven't. Because there's a book came out some time ago, I've got a copy upstairs, about women in service in the war. I can't remember what it's called now. There's a small mention of the nurses who went out east. Absolutely nothing about the Wasbys or the Women's Auxiliary Corps India, which was quite a big organisation. Everything, see, got dispersed out east in the end, and all records and recollections and files and information was concentrated in this, in Europe, in England, and the Far East War was a sort of secondary show, which is, I know it was mostly run by the Americans, but it was a major, major undertaking. I mean, if the Americans hadn't had to come in, I don't think we would ever have defeated the Japs, actually. And they said that the Americans, luckily, got naval supremacy in the Pacific. And I read somewhere that they said you could walk across the Pacific on American submarines. But, I mean, even at the time, one didn't really know enough about it because, of course, everything was so hush-hush.
How easy was it to pick up threads of a sort of normal married life, having spent the wars that you and your husband had, you know, experienced? Did you return to England?
Yes. Well, my husband got his repatriation too. He sent me a signal when I was at Pegu. Sort of return immediately, repatriation immediately, and all this sort of thing. In actual fact, hung around in Calcutta for about 6 weeks. That wasn't entirely his fault. It just took longer for the whole business to be processed. And we sort of had nearly a year together, but we were constantly meeting and parting, and the whole thing was almost like one long honeymoon in a way. And so to get down to proper married life didn't happen until we'd actually got to England, visited our relatives, and met my father again, and spent Christmas 1945 with my parents. And in January of 46, we moved into a flat in Kensington, which Linton's brother had kindly handed over to us. He and his wife had lived there. He'd gone off to be a farmer in Norfolk, and said, "Would you like this flat?" So we jumped at it. And so we started being civilians.
Was it difficult to adapt, though? You know, having been through really very exciting times, hadn't you? You know,
it seemed, yes, in a way. I wasn't then a very domesticated person.
This was
I've
a
never
time
had
of
the bean.
Yes, it was a time of austerity too, wasn't it?
Oh, rations, yes, and it was a nice flat, but we had the most dreadful gas cooker with no controls on it, and I was completely hopeless at cooking.
So you're 2 weeks.
I couldn't I could make a scrambled egg, and that was about the only thing. I've always been willing to learn. And I went to courses at the Regent Street Polytechnic and also the Good Housekeeping Institute in Belgrave Square, where they were putting on cookery demonstrations. And at the Polytechnic, it was a hands-on thing. But with rations, it was quite difficult for them to show you how to do the everyday things, really. Because meat was very strictly rationed. And butter, any kind of fats. So they couldn't show you how to make a stew or anything like that. Cook a roast or whatever. So we did things like making Chelsea buns, I remember, and gooseberry lettuce tart at the Good Housekeeping.
Marguerite Patsy's, do you remember Marguerite Patsy? Was she a help with her books and recipes?
Possibly, yes. Because we listened to the radio quite a lot then, and there was our sort of Women's Hour programme which occasionally gave recipes.
Did you go to the Wasby reunion in 1946?
Oh, there, yes. I left my husband in charge of the baby. We had one by then. Much to his horror. But, yes, it was fun. Can't remember much about it now. I also went to an old school reunion, and the two rather sort of merged now because, you know, meeting.
Yes, there's a big interest now in the Wasbys, isn't there? Do you find that, you know, there are more reunions taking place?
Well, they used to have a lunch every year before the big Burma reunion at the Albert Hall. But I was never able to go because my husband had Parkinson's disease and I was looking after him and I couldn't really leave him until later years when he got some permission for him. It was about 10 years or more, so I was very tired. I couldn't really do much.
Well, thank you very much indeed for telling me so much about your experience, not only the Wasbys, but your very interesting time in Australia as well.
Yes, I forgot it. It was quite interesting because my daughter subsequently went to live in Australia for 10 years. She lived in Sydney. And my sister, after 27 years in Singapore, her husband was a lawyer there, they decided to retire to West Australia, but after a few years there, they came back to Europe. So we've had a long connection with Australia.